The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we will finish up the July issue of Our State Magazine, and as this is the bonus fifth episode for July, we may be able to finish all of the remaining regular monthly columns that we don't normally get to. The first one is North Carolina Naturally, and the article is Shaped by Nature. And the column is Exploring Landscapes and Living Things in Our Great Outdoors. Shaped by Nature, from Sea Turtles to Nutria, Wildlife Makes Ocracoke a World of Its Own. In the beginning, as many indigenous American tales go, the world was covered with water. A giant turtle floated. Animals swam without ceasing. Some took turns attempting to dive down to the sea floor for dirt that they could use to turn the turtle into land where they could rest and grow. Muskrat was the last to try. The creature held its breath and dove as deep as it could. It disappeared in the depths. How could it come down to this? The future of all life resting on the back of a turtle and in the paws of a rodent? Muskrat surfaced. It clutched fistfuls of dirt from the ocean floor and padded them onto the back of the giant turtle. This dirt would become our dirt. The turtle would become our continent. Another creation story, a scientific one, is the story of our Outer Banks. It also has turtles and muskrats. Most ocean islands formed when volcanoes spit their bedrock of lava out from beneath Earth's crust. The creatures and plants that dwell there now arrive by happenstance, by swimming or flying or washing ashore. Our Outer Banks, however, did not come from volcano fire. Instead, these islands formed from the freezing and melting of glaciers. Unlike volcanic islands alone at sea, the Outer Banks land has always been our land, now stranded in the ocean. Their plants and animals are our plants and animals, now held fast by the Pamlico Sound and the Atlantic. Ocracoke Island can only be reached by boat or plane. Because it's surrounded by water, it holds tighter to its animals than islands with bridges that connect land to land. And so, the small island, fewer than 9 square miles, holds vast life. Peter Vankovich found Ocracoke's birds in the 1980s. While taking the ferry from Hatteras to Ocracoke, he had an epiphany. This was protected land. It will never be developed. This is the place he wanted to be, stranded on the small strip of land with his birds. 30 years later, Ocracoke made room for him. He now co-owns the Ocracoke Observer newspaper, helps run the local radio station, works as a volunteer firefighter, and still has time to play poker with the locals on Friday nights. The island holds Vankovich just as it holds the banker ponies rumored to have wandered off Sir Richard Grenville's ship Tiger when it ran aground in the 1500s. It holds the bulrush and the seaside goldenrod, too, that makes strange noises when wind winnows through them. It holds glass lizard, legless, snake-looking creatures whose tails shatter by breaking off, sometimes in pieces if you try to grab them. It cradles migrating birds in the soft sands and sea oaks, gives them shelter and nurseries, and food for their journeys. It holds ancient turtles. 5 of the world's 7 sea turtle species swim ashore to mingle with the six year-round resident species. Like the origin story, these turtles carry whole worlds on their carapaces. The sea turtles hold ecosystems of globe-traveling crabs and barnacles. The land and marsh dwellers carry the shapes and patterns of their ancient ancestors on that living bone of their shells. In Ocracoke, we live on the edge, psychologically, physically, Vankovich says. That's why I like it here. You feel like you're out in nature here. The edge is where you see nature as its strongest. Storms blow unexpected visitors onto the island. We've had coconuts on the beach, gooseneck barnacles clinging to things, odd seashells. He says some things come in and they leave. Everyone remembers the black bear who swam from Portsmouth Island, spent a few days wandering the village, and then swam back. Other visitors come to stay. A boardwalk leads to Ocracoke's stout little lighthouse. On one side, the ground is muddy and thick with marsh plants, parted in ways by network of paths. Each day at dawn and dusk, the path makers reveal themselves. Nutria, bushy, bushy-furred and hungry. These rodents gather marsh plants, their partially webbed hind feet making gentle slaps on the mud. They gather as families and associates in much the same way rat muskrats once gathered before the lighthouse beamed its first ray across the sea. Those muskrats gathered even before the dreamers who believed this earth could have been formed on the back of a gentle giant by the determination of a humble rodent. After the collapse of the fur trade in the 1940s, nutria were released into the wild and found their way to Ocracoke. Even though the nutria's burrows weaken roads and their appetite for marsh plants diminishes the island's natural strongholds against weather, Ocracoke holds them the way it holds the rest of its living things, generously and without judgment. Creation stories come because we watch the world as it is and wonder how it could have begun. We see life brimming from a house built on sand. We see the might and tremor of a whole made from strange and separate pieces, and we all know that it had to come from something. All must be going somewhere. The muskrats may be gone, but every sunrise and sunset, nutria grab that earth in their paws. Offshore, sea turtles still float while the whole wide world swims around them. And there's a couple of pictures here I'll describe. Take a closer look around Ocracoke Lighthouse and its boardwalk, and you might see a glimpse of a relatively recent addition to the island, the South American nutria. And we have a picture of that. It looks somewhat like a guinea pig, a larger guinea pig. Maybe it's related to the capybara. And this is an aerial view of the very plain and rather short Ocracoke Lighthouse, looking out and beyond it over the harbor. And then looking back, there's bordered by the Atlantic Ocean and Pamlico Sound, Ocracoke Island is home to a diverse array of animals and plants, including the ubiquitous sea oats. And those, of course, are everywhere on the Outer Banks. And this is another aerial view of a different from the Atlantic side, looking back toward the harbor from the sky. And you can see the Ocracoke Lighthouse. The next column is called Ramblin' Man, Reflections from a Writer's Wanderings Around the Old North State. And the article is entitled Casting Light. Decades spent on high country waters prepared one fishing guide to dispense wisdom about life and trout. Everything is a conversation, Dustin Coffey says. You're having a conversation with the stream right now, and everything you do while standing in the stream is part of that conversation. And everything in that stream is its conversation back with you. I've never thought about trout fishing that way before, but Coffey often makes me think about things a bit differently. We're slightly north of Blowing Rock, knee-deep in a Blue Ridge stream, where the promise of a trout, or the hope of one, at least, seems to sparkle in every riffle and eddy. Here's the thing, he continues in his rat-a-tat-tat, stay-with-me delivery. That conversation starts before your feet get in the water. It starts when you decide to go fishing. Your attitude, your goals, your hopes for the day. You can't bring a bunch of negative energy to these mountain waters and expect them not to notice. Life and fishing with his grandfather taught Coffey that. When he was a little boy, his grandfather, Bill Coffey, would carry him up a road deep in the wilds below Grandfather Mountain and drop his grandson's bicycle at a stream crossing. Then they'd continue higher into the hills. I'd fish down to my bike, Coffey says, eating huckleberries and drinking spring water, a fishing rod in one hand and a bologna sandwich in the other, and talking to the stream all the way down. Pawpaw Bill taught him many things, how to move so slowly through a trout stream that you make no more disturbances than a beech leaf falling to the water, how to plan your path through the woods or through life in a way that emphasizes harmony. These days, Coffey splits his time as owner of the Boone-based Blue Ribbon Angler in the fall and spring, and as a guide at the Wild Montana Anglers in summer and early fall. He spent nearly 15 years at Chitola Resort in Blowing Rock as the head guide and fishing manager. He studied at the fish at the feet of some of North Carolina's most legendary fishing guides. And he has risen to one of the pinnacles of his profession. Last year, he was named Orvis-endorsed Fly Fishing Guide of the Year. It's the fishing equivalent of winning the world's heavyweight championship belt. We're making our way along the Watauga River in Boone Fork, fishing through a stretch of water that Coffee has long helped manage for healthy trout habitat. He points out where he's added limestone rocks to help regulate the water's pH values and the vibrant patches of moss and algae that have grown on them. A healthy trout stream isn't just about rocks and water, he says. You have to look at the stream banks and beyond. Healthy hemlocks shade the water, creating cool conditions trout require. The bugs that feed fish rely on complex ecosystems of decaying wood and moist rocks, microhabitats that are hundreds of years in the making. We step out of the creek so Coffee can change my fly. These fish aren't going to make it easy on us today, he murmurs. We'll have to figure them out. Well, let's try this. He holds up a deer hair and feather concoction that bristled with a grizzled collar. Sort of a cross between a beetle and a bug, he says with a grin that's simultaneously impish and very, very serious. When Coffee won the Orvis Award, few in his orbit were surprised. I was one of those who knew it was a well-deserved honor. I fished with Coffee for years as a client and a friend. He brings an irrepressible vibe to a day on the water. He has the patience of a half dozen Jobs and the fishing wisdom of an equal number of Solomons. Coffee grew up in a little cabin in the Caldwell County community of Globe. His father, William Thomas Coffee Jr., was a preacher for several tiny churches in the remote mountain region, Johns River, Maple Grove, Globe. It was the middle of nowhere, Coffee says with a smile, but the center of everything. He's been guiding for 24 years, starting when he got his driver's license and bought a set 1978 Dodge long bed pickup. He went to buy some gear at Appalachian Angler, a long gone but once beloved fly shop near Fosco, and heard a customer talking to one of the shop employees. I didn't even know what a guide was, he says, and that one man said he charged $350 for a fishing day. I thought to myself, my gosh, what is this of which you speak? He'd found his calling. Gray-barked sycamores lean over the stream where it takes a slow, sinuous right-hand curve. It looks as if every fishy element of every trout stream in North Carolina has been compressed into this one rung, a riffled slide over a cobbled bottom, the dark shade of rhododendrons, a jagged rock wall clad with moss and old-growth lichens, a deep pool bottomless and black as onyx. I let the fly drift through the water, the fast water, and drop over a ledge to slow down, enticingly, in the foam at the head of the pool. When the big fish strikes, I set the hook too early and snatch the fly right out of his mouth. I know I screwed up. Coffee knows I screwed up. We both laugh with the joy of being such a restorative place and the joy of being beaten by a fish. I didn't name this the humble hole for nothing, he says with a big signature Dustin Coffee laugh. You gotta let them eat like they owe you money. I've just stripped in the line to set up for another cast when Coffee suddenly leaps across a gravel bar, pointing out a tiny insect flitting across the pool, dipping in and out of the shafts of light that angle through the pool. Look, look, look! A slate drake. See him? Do you see him? I see him and watch the bug, a favored trout food, slip behind the rhododendrons. When I turn around, Coffee's digging through his tackle box. There are slate drake flies in there somewhere, he says, because he never leaves the house without them. But then he never leaves the house without whatever it takes to turn another day on a North Carolina mountain stream into a lifelong memory. Sometimes it's the right fly. Most often it's the right frame of mind. Slow down. Listen to the stream. Plan your path. Be grateful, no matter what. And fish like crazy. Come on, he says, his next move already calculated and progressing. Let's get us another one. This next section of the magazine is entitled Murphy to Manteo, Finding New Adventures, Historic Detours, and the Soul of North Carolina on the State's Longest Highway, U.S. Route 64. And this is about cashiers. Wish we were here. when two childhood friends traveled to High Hampton Resort for a weekend of relaxation and memory making, they revived their happy camper spirit amid grown-up luxury. Just by lounging on the lawn at High Hampton Resort in Cashiers, you become part of a century-long tradition. But as I recline on an oversized chaise next to my lifelong best friend, Brooke, whom I can always count on to be up for an adventure, I can't shake my thoughts of responsibilities back home. I wonder if Loud, if we should be doing, well, something. We are, she insists. This, she gently clinks her martini glass against mine, was on my to-do list. She grins and takes a sip. The only other sound is the quiet murmur of music and conversation spilling out onto the harbor, the terrace. And, okay, yes, we hear the distant giggles of children, but crucially, they aren't our children. We drop our heads back and sigh. Our husbands and precious toddlers are back home in the triangle, so there's a no go, 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 no must-dos, no sticky hands or scheduled nap time, although, actually, that last one sounds pretty nice. The lawn before us drops down to a sparkling lake and the breathtaking granite face of Rock Mountain, in whose direction every chair, from pale green Adirondacks to squishy chaises like ours, is pointed. Brooke raises her eyebrows over the top of her sunglasses. Like sisters, we can communicate with just a look, but I don't need to see her eyes to know what this one means. Perfect. As little girls, Brooke and I begged our mothers to send us to sleepaway camp. The summer we were 8, they agreed. That July, we arrived at Camp Pisgah, a Girl Scout camp near Brevard, with dreams of secret handshakes and friendship bracelets, and promptly found ourselves homesick. After our moms dropped us off, my tears started to flow. "It's just 1 week," Brooke told me as she pulled me in for a hug. But that night in our cabins, a mountain breeze blowing through the windows, we cried side by side, hunched over notepads on our twin beds. Our moms still laugh about the melodramatic letters they received. "My tears are all over this paper," we wrote. "Please pick us up. We want to come home." Still, joyful moments hold more weight in my memory. Blue Ridge mornings as we trek to the dining hall, matching necklaces from the camp store, eating Oreos slathered in peanut butter by a campfire, paddling a canoe in a fit of giggles, and on our last night, pushing paper lanterns out onto the lake, candlelight flickering on the water. Our homesickness all but forgotten, we made a pact. We'll come back next summer. High Hampton Resort is less than an hour away from Camp Pisgah, just off U.S. Route 64, and with its chestnut-barked, spark-sided inn and surrounding cottages, its croquet and tennis courts, its hiking trails and dahlia gardens, its lake and boathouse, it feels like a grown-up version of summer camp, the perfect place to relive our childhoods with upgrades. This 1,400-acre property has long been a retreat for those who come to escape the heat and to fill their social calendars. The tradition began in 1924 when Ernest Lyndon McKee and his wife Gertrude Dills McKee, North Carolina's first female state senator, opened a small inn with an 11-hole golf course. Over its many summers, High Hampton Resort became a treasured destination for generations of visiting families. The heart of it all has always been the large Adirondack-style inn built from American chestnut trees and completed in 1933, a replacement for the original, which burned down in 1932. Its expansive wraparound porch and red rocking chairs have invited guests to make themselves at home ever since. Today, High Hampton Inn and the surrounding cottages and cabins make up a nationally designated historic site, historic district, and the new stylish furnishings and amenities never overshadow the rustic charm of their storied past. Upon arriving at our luxurious lakeside suite in the 1932 Halsted Cottage, Brooke and I most certainly do not cry, except for maybe tears of joy. In the mornings and evenings, we trek across the grassy lawn to the historic wood-paneled dining room where we devour dishes like house-made tagliatelle and North Carolina trout paired with seasonal ingredients by executive chef Scott Franquezza. I don't remember the mess hall of our youth having desserts made by a James Beard Award-nominated pastry chef like April Franquezza. Each breakfast begins with a surprise, her still warm coffee cake, perhaps, or a flaky buttery croissant. And each dinner ends with desserts like pavlova, chocolate chip cookies, or coconut cake. At night by the fire pit, we plot out days filled with croquet and canoeing. We hike into the clouds, climbing to the peak of Chimney Top Mountain. When it rains, we cozy up to the inn to play checkers. We talk about how much we miss our boys and we wish they were here, and then how wondrous it is that they aren't. We laugh about the girls we once were and still are. We write postcards to our husbands, the ink blurred by rings of cocktail condensation. We're never coming home, and to our moms, oh, remember when? Stay friends with someone long enough and you'll meet different versions of them. The brave girl, the loyal friend, the new mom. With a little luck and a lot of intention, you learn to love each one. You get to grow up together. Our last night at High Hampton, we look out over the lake in comfortable silence, candles and fireflies flickering on the terrace. We grin as our eyes meet, the most recent iteration of a long-ago secret handshake. We'll be back next summer. High Hampton Resort is located on Highway 107 South in Cashiers, and they have a website, highhampton.com. Another section of our state is called North Carolina Noted. Listening to the music that's shaped our state's history, culture, and people. Tones of the Heart. A luthier in Yancey County crafts instruments with backstories as rich as the people who play them. It Was the One That Got Away, guitar number 17, the 17th instrument that Yancey County luthier Richie Crowder ever built. He'd completed it on February 17th of 2017, and on June 17th, he took it to the Wayne C. Henderson Music Festival and Guitar Competition, where he played it in public for the first time. Crowder loved that guitar. He builds most of his instruments for other people, but he designed guitar number 17 for himself, using red spruce for the top and Brazilian rosewood for the back and sides. He spaced out the strings just the way he likes them and constructed the neck to his personal specifications. Each of his guitars is special, but for Crowder, guitar number 17 was extra special. On a Friday night, high in the hills above Spruce Pine, Crowder is perched on a stool in a little wood shop, surrounded by instruments he's built. The colors of the guitars are earthy and warm, and the grains run across the surfaces like poetry. He gently caresses the mid-sized mahogany shade top that he built for a local singer-songwriter. Then he strums a few chords on the big dreadnought-style guitar he made for his brother Toby. The sound reverberates around the shop like the rich, heavenly tones of a harp. Crowder's always been into music and wood. His dad was a picker who loved bluegrass, and Crowder and Toby learned to play too. Their grandfather was a whittler. He was just an old mountain man, you know, who loved the old ways, says Crowder, who recalls being mesmerized as he learned to whittle right alongside his grandpa. For years, Crowder built furniture in a local factory and then worked in maintenance for the state. In 2015, he decided to build guitars as a hobby. He made his first one on the dining room table. His wife wasn't thrilled about it. When friends caught wind of his work, they began asking him to make custom guitars for them. Soon, he had a wait list 6 months out, then 18 months out, and now he's sold more than 100 guitars across the country. The operation has grown so big that Crowder and his wife are currently building a new house and recently built a new shop. The red spruce that he uses for his guitars is harvested in Maggie Valley. Also known as Adirondack spruce, the species is prized for its clear and powerful tone and is often used for the tops of guitars. Crowder looks outside of North Carolina for other so-called tone woods, the ones with deeper colors and warmer tones, like the Brazilian rosewood that he used for guitar set number 17. Shortly after completing it, he saw a vintage Martin guitar that a friend in Hickory owned. Crowder had long pined for an old Martin, so he traded guitar number 17 for it, but he always missed the instrument. The friend eventually sold guitar number 17 to someone in Alaska, and when that person sold it to someone else, the instrument got lost during shipping. Crowder thought he'd never see it again. Then, in February, exactly 8 years after he built guitar number 17, Crowder said it showed up in an online market. He was ecstatic. He contacted the seller and agreed to buy his old guitar back. In fact, he says, slapping his hand on his thighs and smiling brightly, "It's in transit right now." 2 weeks later, Crowder writes to tell me that the instrument has arrived in Spruce Pine, as lovely as ever, albeit a little rougher for the wear. Guitar number 17, the one that got away, is now safely back home again. All right, I think we'll finish up the rest of our episode with the ways to stay cool. Lewis McCormick Field in Asheville. Watch the best show on dirt from beneath the awning or brim of your baseball cap if you can't get better seats at one of the oldest ballparks in the minor league baseball, Lewis McCormick Field, home to the Asheville Tourists, the high A affiliate team of the Houston Astros. McCormick Field opened in 1924, though the Tourists were established in 1914 and are one of Major League Baseball's longest running teams. The ballpark has hosted a remarkable list of famous players over the years, including Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, and Jackie Robinson. Lewis McCormick Field in Asheville is located at 30 Buchanan Place. Rosie's Coffee and Wine Garden, Charlotte. Just outside Uptown Charlotte lies a secret garden with more than just flowers. Among the lush pink, white, red, and yellow blooms at the McGill Rose Garden, you'll find libations at Rosie's. Oh, enjoy a glass of wine or a cup of coffee as you explore the winding pathways, then find a seat where you can sit beneath the vine-covered pergola or at tables and benches hidden in leafy alcoves. Rosie's is located on North Davidson Street, and you can find their website with more information at their website, rosieswinegarden.com. Cafe Dryad in Chapel Hill. During a hike or bike ride along Bolin Creek Trail in Chapel Hill, stop by this European-style cafe for an ice-cold brew or tea. The cafe, with its tables tucked back into the surrounding forest, offers refreshing beverages ranging from espresso drinks to ginger beer, perfect for a pick-me-up during an outing along the roughly 1.5-mile trail. And you can find more information on them at Cafe Dryad. And that's Cafe, C like Charlie, A, F, F like Frank, E, D like David, R, I, A, D like David, E.com. So Cafe with two Fs. Robert G. Shaw, Piedmont Triangle Farmers Market in Colfax. Even your errands can offer a temperate escape. Peruse tens of thousands of square feet of covered open-air market buildings in search of fresh summer produce, plants, meats, cheeses, and other local goodies. The cherry on top? A frozen lemonade from Green Love Coffee, herbal tea, and more. Or a scoop of farm-fresh ice cream from Homeland Creamery. And they're located on Sandy Ridge Road in Colfax, the Robert Shaw Piedmont Triad Farmers Market. Well, that sound means that we are out of time for today. We hope you've enjoyed our episode and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and they can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired and is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.